I'm speaking with Joe and Kathy Osman of Pawpaw. They have been in Kenya now for a few weeks. They are part of a mission there which is helping to prepare for Kenyan elections in early March. Thank you very much for joining us via Skype today.
You're welcome. It's good to be with you.
Good to talk to you.
What's the most surprising thing you've seen so far since you arrived in Kenya?
Oh, we didn't prepare anything to answer that question. Most surprising. I'm not sure that I have a good answer to that. Maybe it was the when the cheetahs jumped onto the top of our safari vehicle.
Hope everyone was okay.
Oh, yeah. Apparently they do that on a regular basis. It helps them to get a better view of their potential prey when the grass is tall. And they just sort of like hanging out there and don't mind that there are people right there with them. When we first got here, we did about a 4-day safari into what's called the Masai Mara area. It's the northern extension of the famous Serengeti Plains, which are in Tanzania. And it was just a fabulous time.
What's been the most rewarding part of the trip?
For me, I was thinking more about our life living here and what's surprising. I think what surprised me is the infrastructure challenges that are here for everybody. I mean, I knew that rural poor would have those kinds of challenges, but the more affluent people do too. The roads are not in good condition for the most part, and regular access to safe water is not a given. And there's a number of things like that that it sort of surprised me how it affects just about everybody.
Even in the capital city of Nairobi, which is probably for the most part the most affluent part of the country, although there are several quite extensive slums with just extreme poverty, but the great majority of people walk to and from work, sometimes for more than a couple of miles. You'll see them during the commute hours walking up and down the sides of the road. So there really is what we would consider from a United States perspective, a lot of deprivation and a lot of lack of creature comforts throughout the country. Mm-hmm. In terms of what's been the most rewarding, you also asked then what's been the most rewarding experience for us. For me, I think that it has been participating as a facilitator in voter education sessions. This is one of the main things that our organizations are doing to help prepare for the elections, because these are the first elections under the new constitution. There are many, many governmental changes that are going into effect. And it's just really important to get the word out to voters about what they're going to be voting on and what some of the new laws are and what are some of the do's and don'ts about what politicians can do. And and people have just been extremely, extremely appreciative of the sessions that we have delivered, and the fact that Kathy and I have been there from the United States helping to do that.
Is there any reason for you to be concerned about your safety? There were, of course, violence after the elections in 2007. So far, have you seen anything that indicates that safety could be a problem?
I'd like to respond to that, because that was certainly one of my concerns before I came. And I have not felt unsafe for the most part. I've even begun to travel a bit on my own, alone on public transportation. And the only times I've felt a bit unsafe are pretty similar to what I would feel in any strange place, where I felt a little vulnerable in crowded big cities and after dark. But I haven't felt concerned about election-related violence. What we've seen so far has been very isolated and minimal. And we did just have a whole session today on our own personal contingency planning should there be violence nearby. And I feel like we're in a place where we're fairly protected and safe, and have options to sort of hold up here with supplies should there be violence that sort of shuts down the services in the country.
I attended just a couple of days ago. I attended a session that was hosted by the American Embassy in Nairobi for U.S. citizens, just specifically to talk about security issues around the elections. And they emphasized that there have been no threats that they have become aware of directly towards American citizens. And they just said, you know, use your common sense. If you see a crowd of people that look kind of threatening, walk the other way. And for the most part, the election related violence that happened 5 years ago was Kenyan against Kenyan, and we don't look Kenyan. So we're probably not going to be likely targets directly.
On your blog, you had an interesting post a little while back about similarities and differences between Kenya and elections in the West. Now, among the similarities are the cost of campaigning. This is interesting. It is estimated that the four leading coalitions are spending 10 million Kenyan shillings, that's about $115,000 per day, on helicopters alone. What are these helicopters being used for in the course of a campaign?
The leading candidates for president are using helicopters to get around the country. The status of the infrastructure here is such that to travel by land takes a great deal of time. And for the candidates to be able to cover the whole country in a reasonable period of time, they have acquired these helicopters and to some extent fixed wing aircraft just to get themselves around the country.
Now, you also note that something has gone on in Kenya fairly regularly, I guess, before, that I don't believe I've ever seen in the United States, campaigning at funerals. How does that work?
Well, we attended a funeral about 2 weeks ago. A neighbor here, an elderly neighbor, passed away, and it was quite an experience. And it's sort of hard to fathom, but one of the traditions is that people who are visitors come up and speak, and anyone who wants to speak about the person who has died comes up and speak, and of course the family all speak. So there's kind of an open microphone situation, and it seems to be common practice. We had, I think, 11 or 12, of the local, more local campaign participants, the aspirants or candidates that showed up, put a donation into the collection plate, and then spoke briefly over the microphone about why they should be elected. It was really kind of disturbing. It seemed very intrusive to us on the family's time to grieve, but people there didn't seem to find it surprising.
Right, and quite a number of them got some significant applause.
By the way, that is now illegal. That is now illegal under the new code of conduct that the candidates signed. So that is something that will be changing.
One of the other things you mention in your blog is bribery of voters. And of course, you say there's nothing to stop a voter from accepting money from more than one candidate for the same office. But there's a widespread perception that voters who accept money from candidates will not vote for a person who has not given them money. So in other words, if you want this person to consider you, you would have to be at least one of the candidates who pays them to vote. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and that is something else that is now illegal under the code of ethics or the code of conduct for political candidates. As a matter of fact, however, I understand that it has always been illegal, but it is strictly common practice for that to happen. We're not talking about large amounts of money. Sometimes less than a dollar of American money to each individual. There was a wonderful, just little example of that in terms of how common it is. At the voter education session that I did last week, we started out with a little brainstorm about how you can, what are some ways to help make elections peaceful. And one of the participants in this class said, well, we had a candidate here the other day who was handing out money, and he didn't have enough. And so some of the youths who didn't get money were pretty upset, and it got kind of ugly. So he said one way to promote peaceful elections is if you're a candidate and you're going to be passing out money, make sure you've got enough to go around. And to him, that was a perfectly reasonable response.
Does this code of conduct you've mentioned a couple times now, some of the things which have gone on frequently in the past and will now be illegal, would you see this as someone who's observing this election as that's a sign of progress, that there is an attempt here in Kenya to set some boundaries and some rules by which to have a fair and open election?
I would certainly agree that it is a step in the right direction. And it wouldn't be necessarily in and of itself, but there have been also changes to the judiciary that have happened and that have already taken place since the 2010 constitutional changes. And people are commenting frequently that the judiciary is much stronger and more independent. And so it looks to me like not only is this code of conduct clearly in place and signed by the candidates, but that there will be some court cases that sort of set precedents that they're going to enforce it. We haven't seen that happen yet. But this is the first election where this is coming to play, that code. So I think that will happen and that gradually it will change.
Is the infrastructure you talk about, the poor condition of the roads and water safety, are these issues in the Kenyan elections?
Oh, yes, they certainly are. Each one of the presidential candidates and their parties, I should say, really have come out with what they call manifestos, which are basically similar to party platforms in the U.S., only they're far more extensive, and they cover just about everything that you can imagine that people in Kenya might want to come out of an election. And the infrastructure issues are definitely pretty high on the priority lists.
All right. Is there anything else either of you want to add for now?
Yeah, I want to mention a couple of things about this election system that's going on right now that are positive in terms of hopefully preventing future violence. One is the national body that is conducting the elections is called the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, and they have done a really remarkable job of establishing systems that are designed to prevent fraud. And alleged electoral fraud was probably the main reason for the violence 5 years ago. And IEBC, this Election Commission, has come into place since that last election. Actually, was created by the new constitution, and the systems that they have put in place are really very highly credible. We'll see how successful they will be in carrying them out, but it looks very positive. The other thing is that after the 2007 election, the one particular candidate who lost the presidency in the alleged fraud basically told his supporters to start demonstrating and to take to the streets. And now all of the presidential candidates have publicly signed a pledge to, if they feel that they have cause to challenge the election, that they will challenge it in court rather than in the streets. And as Kathy mentioned, the judiciary has gained a lot of credibility since the last election as well. So we're hopeful that they will be true to their word and utilize the judicial avenue rather than the public demonstration avenue, if indeed they feel that the process hasn't been fair.
And Gordon, if I just might add, the election is a week from this coming Monday, March the 4th. So we're kind of in the final push of preparations here. Joe and I have been approved as official election observers by the Election Commission. And so we will be involved with getting trained and training other observers next week. We will be observing out in the community, but a number of the other observers in our organization will be in the polling stations. And so we will all be able to directly observe that the procedures are followed to prevent the fraud, and also to observe the reactions of people in the community and respond early to any warning signals of discontent or conflict.